Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. It's hard to think of a couple who we've taken to our hearts more than actors Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan.
They learned early on what most of us take a lot longer to realize, that marriage is a day-to-day journey of love and grit.
They lived just walking distance from us, so it was really disappointing that I still had the flu on the date we were scheduled to visit them. Marlo had to go it solo.
And they really miss seeing you. It's funny what a small world this is. It turns out that many years ago, Michael and Tracy had rented the very same apartment that we had once rented. And now here we are, all living on the same street. You know, on a good day, you could probably hit a golf ball onto their balcony.
Well, actually, that would take an iron, but beyond our neighborhood, we share a lot in common.
I started by asking them about their dating before they met.
I know you dated a lot of interesting people, and you dated a lot. I was reading about you. You had a lot of handsome, beautiful people in your lives, but you clicked. And so how did you know this was the right person?
Well, it's interesting you say that. You know, when you're younger, you go out with a lot of people, but you kind of know instantly this isn't the right person.
Uh-huh.
And so you're thinking, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, this is fun, how do I get out of it?
Right.
And then you meet someone and you go, this is fun, I don't want to ever get out of this.
And then there's a leap of faith at that point. Also because you're so young.
When I first met her, she was this theater actress from New York, and I was this like Prince of Hollywood idiot.
You were not.
Clown. And there's just such a dignity about her a consideration of what was going on. I didn't consider anything. I mean, I just kind of jumped into situations and took over. And I just thought, wow, this poise. And that's what she has, is poise.
When you walked down the aisle, you were pretty sure that this was the right one. Was there anything, one little thing that you weren't quite sure about that you had to, like, figure out?
Right. I do know that I was, you know, I'd been in so many Broadway shows and done so many things like that, and I'd never had as much stage fright as I had right before I walked down the aisle. I thought I was gonna pass out. I was so nervous, and I just realized all of a sudden, oh, this is a really big deal. You know, like, am I ready for this? I just think that general feeling of like, what have I gotten myself into? And then I started to walk, and it all fell away.
And how old were you then?
27. And you feel so old at the time when you're 20, you know, when you're in your 20s. But now I look back at my kids and I go, oh, we were babies.
Yeah,
we were just little toddlers.
Your image is somewhat like mine, which is, you know, you're on top of it and you're fun and you go out with Michael or Marlo, you're going to have a good time. They're just all, you know. At some point, you had to show this woman that you were taking into your life, that you weren't that way all the time. You know, that you had to, like, let it out and say, this is also who I am. And that has nothing to do with your health. It has to do with you as a personality. So
yeah, well, the thing with the health is that the four things happen in a really short amount of time. Patient I got married, our son was born, my father passed away. And they are diagnosed, and then they quit drinking. So it's like five things. It's like these major, life's huge, massive changes, and became a different person. And it was a person I had to become to survive and to be successful going on in life. And it was great that I made those changes. I needed to own my diagnosis, own what that meant for my family, and be prepared to do what I needed to do to make that okay. And Tracy met me and helped me along the way and got me through over those hurdles. So it was a big it was a big test early on in our marriage.
You bet. What adjustment did you make to have another person in your life?
Well, one thing that we did that we wouldn't do anything different in our lives. I mean, I can't speak for you, but I wouldn't do anything different in our lives. Our lives turned out fantastic. We had our son was born really early in our marriage, so we had a quick adjustment to, we got married and then we were parents. So that accommodation, I mean, extended to this other person all of a sudden. And so we were never really traditional newlyweds. We were parents within the first year of our marriage.
Right.
So it was a different kind of adjustment. It's a different kind of
You didn't have a girlfriend anymore. Now you had a co-parent.
Also, when we first got married, Michael's life was like very large. And so I had to sort of find my place where there was so much space being taken up by, not by him personally, because he's not like that personally, but he just had a lot going on. There was job after job after job. And we used to walk down the street and I would call him Mr. Mayor because everybody would say hello and hi, Mike. He just had this kind of persona that everybody wanted to talk to him or be with him. And so for me, it was sort of trying to figure out how to accommodate room for that big life, but also maintain my own independence and what I did. And so that was sort of an adjustment, I would say.
You're really great because at the same time as you were finding that space in my life, you found a new space for me. Like, I didn't realize how much input there was and how much sensory overload I was dealing with until Tracy said to me, and it was one of the things that sealed the deal for me in terms of her being the person that I wanted to be with forever.
Yeah.
Was she just said, in so many words, this is going to kill you. This is going to kill you. You don't have any room for yourself in your life. You don't have any room for relationships that are real, that are based on something other than business. And I was just like, wow, that's right. And I started all of a sudden started to crave privacy and crave moments to be alone and crave places to go where no one would be there to greet us or give us special attention.
Sometimes, actually, that's a funny thing when you're talking about that. Michael had so many people working for him and, you know, and yes men and agents and assistants. And so we would argue and he would say, nobody else in my life says that to me. And I'm like, yeah, because you pay all of them. So, of course, they're not going to say that. They're going to get fired. I'm the only person that isn't worried about being fired. So that was,
Yeah, that is absolutely true.
That's right. And what do you think that you get from each other that you can't get from anybody else? Like with me, with Phil, when I'm blue... And I'm a pretty optimistic person, but when I'm blue, he's the only person that can do a reality check with me that I believe. You know what I mean?
He
pulls me up
staunch,
from right.
Yeah, fan.
He's
yeah.
my cheerleader.
Tracy does that for me too. Because I have the same thing. I'm supposed to be Mr. Sunshine, Mr. Optimism, and times when I get really, you know, some stuff is just hard to deal with, whether it's health issues or other things. And Tracy's always got the thing to say that. It makes me look at it in another way, and then I can take things and make them right size.
That's a great thing to say. And what about you?
I can get very involved in the personal relationships, you know, between friends or family members, and I can really sort of get a little too affected by arguments that I've had with someone or someone said something to me. And the only person I ever want to talk to when I'm in a state like that or upset about something is Michael, because he has so much perspective.
The funniest thing to say I've said to Tracy before is when you say, if they only knew, like you're having a conflict with somebody and you'd say, if they only knew what, and I'd say, if they only knew, they still wouldn't give a shit.
That's true. Sometimes I'll get so kind of wrapped up in that thinking, and I'll just say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call that person, and I'm going to say this, this, and that. And Michael always says, to what end? What do you want to gain from that?
She's much better at that than I am. I mean, I say to what end, because I don't know how to have those conversations. But you really should have done that, and I should have done that. It's just like, let's just start over.
Well, so how do you resolve problems then?
There's always a period of time. I have a tendency to want to come back in and make it all okay. I've grown more likely to, if we have a disagreement about something, to give it some air.
So when you say give it some air, you mean don't get into a confrontation about it?
Don't do what I want to do, which is keep coming in the room every 5 seconds and saying, are we okay now?
And I also find, I see a lot of times the people that I know that have these just constant, like, I think that we used to do it more kind of at the beginning of our relationship, but this idea that you have to hash through and discuss every single thing is really to no great benefit, because sometimes you just have to assume, you know what, he said something schmucky, made me feel bad, but he's a good person. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't realize what he said hurt my feelings. And I think he does the same with me. So this whole thing like that I see my friends sometimes having to do is let's sit down and talk this through. And then it's like they're up till 3 a.m. because they can't go to sleep until they figured it out. And we're just kind of look at each other and we go, that's fine. Let's move on. I know you didn't mean it. You know I didn't mean it. Let's move on. Yeah.
So how long did it take you to get to that? Because it's taken us about 20 years of our 40-year marriage to be able to say.
So halfway through you got to it.
So what about you guys? Was that a skill you had right away? Or is that something?
No, definitely not a skill we had right away. But I think we actually learned it a lot from seeing other relationships kind of fall by the wayside. And I would just see that it just wasn't a healthy way of dealing with it. Like, celebrate the positive. You don't have to dwell on all of the negative things that, when, but
kids just play such a huge role. And we have terrific kids. They're so non-judgmental and non-demanding, and they're just enjoying life. And we kind of look at them and say, what a great life we have. I mean, what can be wrong with this? Uh-huh. It's beautiful what we've done.
So it sounds to me like gratitude is something
gratitude's huge. Gratitude is a great space for me to be in because I deal with this health thing and what keeps me balanced is gratitude. It's like being in a place of acceptance. Uh-huh. It's just like if you accept something, it doesn't mean you're resigned to it. It just means you accept it and you look at it and you're honest about it. And I think acceptance is so much a part of my life, and it's a part of marriage.
And you had a lot of accepting to do when Michael got sick, right?
I mean, that was very, very early in our marriage. And we didn't even think it was going to be, I didn't go to the doctor because we didn't think it was going to be anything big. And the thing that was odd about that diagnosis was that when you get that diagnosis at such a young age, and he was like, had very, very few symptoms. So you kind of have this big piece of news, and then nothing really has changed at that moment in the day to day. You're sort of being told, now everything's going to be the same, but come 10 years, it's going to be. So it's a funny thing to grapple with, especially as a young person and as a young married couple, because...
How old were you?
29.
29, wow.
And we had, you know, we just had a very young child. And so it was definitely something to process and something to deal with. But at the same time, once we kind of dealt with, you know, that big kind of realization, our life stayed the same. It wasn't like all of a sudden he was, you know, not able to walk, or all of a sudden he wasn't able to participate in the same way that he'd been participating. So it was more kind of an idea in the head than it was an actual reality. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the moment that I told you that was, I had a goofy injury, I had a muscle pull or something, and I just didn't think about it. I had it for a year and I didn't think about it that much. So I went to this neurologist just to check it out, because I'd been going to a sports therapist guy. And so that's why Tracy didn't go to the doctors with me, because I just went to, it was like this thing, a small issue as far as I was concerned. And then he gave me this diagnosis. So I came home and I told her, and we just held each other and just kind of like, but like Tracy said, it was a strange thing, because it was like, a bus is coming and it's going to hit you one day. We don't know when.
Right.
But it's going to come. It's going to hit you. And I was like, what do? Do I go to bed? I mean, do I take an aspirin? I mean,
there's nothing that changes.
So but just, you feel you brought a weight into the marriage. Like my point of view is I brought this thing in, not that I did it intentionally or whatever, but I feel responsibility for it. I feel like it's my elephant that I brought to the party and it was invited. And so how are we going to accommodate it?
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to Marlo's conversation with Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan. When we left off, Michael had just told Tracy about his life-changing diagnosis of Parkinson's.
Did you ever worry that she might bail out on you?
I worried that I might become bailable, that I might not deal with it well. And for a while, I didn't deal with it really well, really successfully. I didn't have a good approach to it. I mean, I just kind of ignored it, and then I over-medicated and wrongly medicated and started drinking a little bit more than I had been. And that all lasted about a year, year and a half. And then I started taking it seriously. But all that Tracy had to deal with, and so I wasn't worried about her bailing on me. It was worried about me, like this is my thing. I have to make this work within the marriage and within the family. I have to find a way to not use it as something that separates me from my family, but something that connects me with my family.
What about you, Tracy? Did you ever have in the back of your mind, oh my God, I can't do this? Will I
not
make
in
it?
Terms of in the big picture, definitely moments where it's just like, I can't handle this, I can't. But I never thought, I can't handle this today, so I'm out for good. I mean, that's just not how I live my life. It's not how I was raised. It's not, you know, you love somebody, you deal with whatever it is they're dealing with, and their issues become your issues. And so, you know, definitely there are struggles, but then there are also benefits and positive things that, you know, so you just sort of have to take it all. You take the good with the bad. And so I never, ever thought in the long run, I can't deal with
this.
On
the days that you didn't think you could handle it, mm-hmm. what did you do for yourself to get through that?
You know, family for me is super important. Having... just for everything like that in my life, I'm a very, very independent person, and I need my time alone, and I need to exercise, and I need to spend time with my friends. So I feel like as long as I'm able to carve out time for myself, especially when things feel overwhelming, and then I'm able to sort of regenerate a little bit and come back into a situation feeling stronger and more whole.
One of my husbands, he has five children, and one of his sons was doing dangerous things after 1 year of our marriage. And of course, I did what you did. I just dug right in and mm-hmm. did everything. And years later, Phil said to me, boy, he said, you know, I thought you'd bail on me on that. I said, you did? No, I accepted it, mm-hmm. you know, but there is that feeling that the other one might have.
Right.
I was scared. I was scared to death because I never knew anything like that. And I would have awful dreams. Did you ever have terrible dreams? Or is that too personal?
It's not that I can specifically remember, but I do feel like in terms of when you're dealing with something as a couple, either you're dealing with the death of a parent, or you're dealing with an illness, or you're dealing with an issue with your kids. And those things that seem so insurmountable and difficult, once you've kind of gone through them together and gotten to the other end of it, it just makes you stronger. It makes your marriage stronger, the relationship, and you realize, okay, we handled that. We can handle the next thing. And, you know, it just sort of gives you fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
together as like a united front.
And a path.
Mm-hmm.
A path through
right.
it. Yeah. Are there things you do physically to help Michael?
It's tough. I'm going through transition now because I can't walk as well as I did. So I used to, I used to go with my dog and walk the park, go over to the Museum of Natural History and go to the dog park there and walk back through the park and all that stuff. I can't do that anymore. I may be able to one day in the future, I hope, but I can't right now. So in the same way we used to go do stuff. So now we're finding ways to like, we're on a safari and I could be in the Jeep a lot of the time. And that it's an allowance. It's change.
Are you going on a safari?
We did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did over last.
And how did you do? Was it
great?
And the whole family?
I didn't want to go at one point. I just said, I don't know what this does for me because I can't do this stuff. And she said, sit in the Jeep and look at the elephants. I mean, have a good time. And
he said, if one of those animals start coming for us, I'm the one
that they're going to eat.
Yeah,
I'm the one who can't run.
I was writing about that. I'm the one by the watering hole. It's sick, lame, and old. So, I mean, Tracy's always encouraged me to get involved and to not to project where I might be, you know. So I tend to take things on because I figure I'll just meet the day.
Right.
And Tracy gives me that encouragement to just meet the day. When we get there, we'll deal with it.
I think that's great. Did you enjoy it?
Loved it.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Fantastic.
What would you pass on that you've learned as a couple?
I would say, I guess, three things. I'd say, number one, give each other the benefit of the doubt. Know that this is the person you love and this person loves you. So just assume the best from them. Don't assume the worst. Because it's easy to get sort of sucked into that. And I would say, make sure you carve out time to spend together, even when you have your kids and, you know, to have your date nights and to have just that time together is so important. And at the same time, carve out time to have by yourself. And because the time that you have by yourself informs the time that you have together, I think. What would you say?
And I think, too, that you're not trying to create a new situation for you, like a new thing for you. Like, this is a thing for both of you, and it's going to be a new thing. It's going to be a different thing. Your socks may not end up in the same place where you used to put them, but it's becoming a new thing. It's becoming a new phenomenon, and I enjoyed that. Like, I loved that. I loved it. It was a new world.
Are you comfortable, and have you always been comfortable with bringing up hard topics? You know, for me, it took me a while because I'm so independent. And because I liked my image of being all powerful, it was very hard for me to start really bringing up things that hurt me and that were hard for me. And it took a while. I had to trust Phil enough to be that vulnerable.
Right.
Every time I have a thing I go along and get along, and I have a good time. I'm happy for the ride, and people say, you know, you have all these issues, and I said, there's worse issues. There's people who have pancreatic cancer, they lost their kids, there's this stuff that's horrible in this world, and I'm doing okay. But every once in a while, I hit a wall, and I'll hit a place where I just need someone to get underneath me and get me up over that wall. And she's always that person. Mm-hmm. She's always that person. It's every time. I mean,
do you tell her, though?
Yeah.
In other words, you confide it, or she just notices.
No, I'll tell her. I'll say. I'm just. I haven't got it today. I'm just. I feel. I don't say I get beyond this, and she'll say, you will. I mean, just today. So you feel this moment, but you'll feel different tomorrow, and it'll be a different set of facts, and new things will show up, and it'll change, and it does, but. But I never hesitate to do that. We don't look for trouble. We don't pick scabs. I think some marriages, people look at their partner and say it's a vulnerability, and they just can't help but go after that vulnerability, and it's like sport or something. We don't do that.
I think I'm similar to you in that it took a while for me to feel comfortable talking about sort of bigger issues. But what's interesting about it is that it's easy for me to hear that to you know, if Michael's coming to me with things that are difficult for him to share, and that's what kind of gives me the confidence and the assurance that it's okay to share as well as it is to mm-hmm. receive.
Mm-hmm. So if you had to say what's made your marriage last?
I would say just keep your sense of humor. It's everything. Just keep each other laughing and laugh at each other's jokes. It's the key.
Yeah. So I was working on a book out called Always Looking Up. It was about optimism. And one day I was really bothered. I missed deadline after deadline after deadline, and I was just really bogged down. And Tracy said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "I'm never going to finish this fucking book on optimism." And she said, you just said.
I said, "You're kidding me, right?" Fine. Yeah, because he said, "I'm never going to finish my book about optimism." And I said, "Not with that attitude, you want."
After 30 years, this is hopefully your best friend in the world. And just like the first person I think of when I think of anything, my first thought was, what's Tracy think? What would Tracy say? How does Tracy fit into this? It's nice.
That's Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan. I'm sorry I wasn't there.
After I left and began to walk home, it took me by surprise that I started to cry. What I had been witness to was the grace of two people whose lives are braided together with love, commitment, and steel. It filled my heart. This is marriage.
This is marriage. And after our many double dates, only some of which we've shared this season, our biggest lesson turned out to be this. There is no one secret to a lasting marriage.
No, there are a million secrets, so keep listening for them.
And we'll be listening too. I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas.
Stay tuned for news about the second season of Double Date. Until then, you may hear previews of other Pushkin shows in this feed. Enjoy. And meanwhile, treat yourself to your own double date with other couples in your life. You'll be surprised how much you can learn. We sure did. Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.